Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Saturday, the 24th of June, recording at 10:14 a.m. British Summer Time. Now, first, apologies for yesterday's missing audio. I haven't the slightest idea what went wrong, but our intrepid and all-seeing doctor of IT, Chris Martin, who watches all the incoming emails, had noticed that some people had mentioned that the audio did not appear, so he rang me, and so I'm back in the office to record a new audio. Now, this being the Friday audio, and this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes, but first I always start with a quick review of the week past. When it was a week in which stock markets regained their nerve and staged technical rallies. It was also a week in which we saw government bonds generally sag. It was a week in which the US dollar regained its upward momentum. After a period of consolidation, the dollar was quite strong on Thursday and not quite so strong, but it managed to extend those gains on Friday as well. That strength weighed on metals a bit, but not all that much. Soft commodities mostly a little bit easier. Okay. Now first, where are we in terms of the stock market cycle? I maintain that in the short to medium term, we are very much within the medium-term correction that I had long forecast for the second and third quarters of 2006. Now, yes, we have steadied, and I feel that this rally has limited legs in here, certainly in the for the next few weeks and possibly months, for a couple of reasons that I've mentioned previously. One, I think that the momentum players will understandably be on the sidelines. Number two, because markets had come off really quite rapidly, there will be some stale bull positions around. In other words, people who had maybe bought a little bit too much up at the highs or were sufficiently frightened by the downward move that they wouldn't mind lightening if markets bounce back and give them an opportunity to take profits at or cut a loss at slightly better levels. And number three, and possibly the most important factor here, would be that the people who have the money that would be willing to invest, those are long-term investors, and let's say also the momentum players. So the momentum players won't come in until an uptrend is reasserted, either near here or off a lower low. And the other people, the longer-term investors, well, they know that seasonally this isn't a great time for markets. They know that there are question marks over interest rates, and they may also be looking for somewhat better value, as some of us indeed are. So they're likely to be largely on the sidelines as well. So I've described this as moving into the apathy market, where people lose interest temporarily a bit. Now, I have emphasized that from an analytical standpoint, I think that you and I should do anything but succumb to apathy. I think this is a time to remain very, very alert, if only because it keeps our intuitive feel for the markets alive and functioning. And it's also a good time to be monitoring valuations and monitoring, in particular, chart patterns to see exactly what is shaping up in terms of relative outperformance. I suspect that when this correction is all over, and I maintain my view that I think it'll probably be the end of October at latest, and then I think we'll be back into really what is a quite bullish overall environment for global stock markets. But between now and then, it will be important to be able to assess what's holding up best, what's showing the most support building on charts, And what provides the early upside leadership? Because those markets and sectors and individual shares will probably lead for quite some time. So let's remain analytically very, very interested. I certainly will, at any rate, and I imagine most of you will as well. Now, I expect some slowdown in global economic activities. Sorry about the scratchy voice. I'm just going to pause here for a little drink of water. Back again. And I do expect some slowdown in global economic activity. That would be hardly surprising given the hikes in interest rates that we're actually seeing. Now, while that will weigh on corporate profits temporarily, and that may well be reflected in stock markets over the next few weeks and months, I do, however, maintain that we've seen the worst of the sell-off that is likely to occur. And I also feel that economic slowdown that will enable central banks to declare at least a partial victory against the inflation that they created, a certain amount of humbug in this, as you know, and then to say that while they're going to remain vigilant, that the rate hikes are first over. And if we see economic growth continue to slow down, and it might, then I think the central banks will clearly be in a position to start cutting rates, and stock markets will certainly like that. Now, I do maintain that the outlook from the fourth quarter onwards, or at least from the end of October onwards this year, well through most of 2007 and 2008, will really be quite bullish overall. And I suspect that the sectors that will do best of all are ones that we have liked so much over the last 3.5 years. And that would be resources, the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. And it would also be emerging markets, particularly Asian emerging markets. Now, there is quite a bit of overlap between the resources theme and some, although not all, of the emerging markets. And why the emerging markets? I just feel that first valuations are quite attractive in most of these. And also, they're likely to have by far the best growth outlook in the period ahead. I think that they will perform well in what is a modestly inflationary environment, with inflation probably picking up over the long term. Now, again, you know that I'm technically driven. That's my theory at this stage. It's a theory that served us well up until the predictable May high for so many global stock markets. It's a theory that served us well during that long run, for instance, from March 2003 onwards until last month, as I've just said. And I believe that it will serve us well again, and well into the future, for the reasons that I've detailed on so many occasions. But you know that I'm technically driven, and if that theory needs to be revised, those theories need to be revised for any reason whatsoever, then we will see the evidence for that on the charts. I don't expect that, but I'll keep my eyes open and try to remain objective and call it as I see it at the time. But at this stage, again, I maintain it'll be the same sectors that we've liked all along. Okay. Those will also include, among developed countries, I believe, Japan and South Korea. Those had those very, very long secular bear markets, as you know, and they really didn't begin their secular bull markets proper until well into the global stock market recovery cycle. And I think we'll be rewarded in those areas, in those markets as well. Okay, moving on to the government bonds. You know, I don't like this sector. I maintain that it is in a secular bear market overall, and that's because of the overall gradually rising inflation pressures that we are likely to see around the world. And I also maintain that it's partly a supply problem, and of course, then long-term yields were starting from a very low base following that 18-year plus secular bull market that we saw in the sector. So I don't like any of the long-dated government bond markets except as occasional short-selling opportunities. And I do look for those, as you know. And I was hoping that government bonds would rally up a bit more during this technical correction, this medium-term correction in stock markets. They might still do just that. And with evidence of global GDP growth slowing, that may well help as well, particularly once all the talk of higher interest rates subsides. But again, this is not an area where I will be investing. I think it's likely to see the poorest performance overall, but I do feel that it will offer trading opportunities on the short side. Now, in terms of currencies, the US dollar has benefited recently as we have seen people deleverage and we have seen money pulled back to home markets, and a lot of that money would be heading back towards the US after quite a bit of diversification around the globe in emerging markets in Japan and other overseas markets. This is often the case that when investors deleverage, we do see some temporary steadying in the US dollar. Now, interestingly, the firmer dollar will be helping to do Bernanke's job in terms of reducing the inflation pressures that had concerned the Fed recently. And as will the relatively firm government bond yields overall. And I feel quite strongly that the US administration will want to see a gently softer US dollar. They certainly don't want a dollar falling rapidly because that raises fears of a crisis and is destabilizing. But they will want to see the dollar drifting gently lower. As you know, in this environment, as I've said so on so many occasions, no country wants a strong currency. And the main reason for that, of course, is because of the intense pressure from globalization. So they want their export products to be competitive, and therefore a strong currency winds up being passed on to somebody else as quickly as possible. And the US dollar has been strengthening in here recently. So I think that that will stay Bernanke's hand somewhat. In other words, you now have people talking about six and three, I beg your pardon, 5 3/4, 6% interest rates quite possibly this year. I think that's unlikely. That has those expectations, say, have also been a factor behind the US dollar's strength. So while we will need to see a clear technical signal that this dollar strength is ending, I thought we might be getting some preliminary signs early in the week just completed, but that clearly was not the case with the additional breakout that we saw on Thursday and follow through on the upside on Friday for the US dollar. But again, I do feel quite strongly that we've seen the bigger portion of this technical rally for the US dollar by far. And once that dollar does start to turn down again, that will have some interesting implications, and not least for the precious metals sector. And you know, I've long said that gold has been remonetized in the eyes of investors. Now, this was not an overnight conversion. This has been a gradual conversion over the last 5 years, and most of that conversion process has taken place really in the last year or two. Veteran subscribers will know that we've been talking about gold's base building and the fact that it was so cheap and the over long-term upside potential and forecasting another secular bull market really for at least the last 4 years or so. And gold got quite overextended along with most of the commodity sector, moving very much in line with most of the global stock market sector. So a medium-term correction is underway for gold as well. But I feel even more strongly that gold and its sister precious metals have certainly seen, if not their entire correction, and they may have seen their entire medium-term correction, that they have certainly seen by far the biggest portion of that overall correction. And I have described precious metals as being back in an accumulation zone recently, and that is as of that downward acceleration that we had seen the week before. Sorry, not in the well, not in the 5 days market days just passed, but in the preceding week. I think it was on the Tuesday that we'd seen that downward acceleration. Tuesday a week ago. So again, the only reason, and I've mentioned this, that I have not actually bought more precious metals myself is because of this trip into hospital on Monday for some reconstructive surgery. Otherwise, I definitely would have been nibbling in here. And I do maintain that gold and its sister precious metals will outperform all currencies over the long term. And I also maintain that they will outperform the Dow Jones Industrial Average and a good many other assets that we might consider. So gold will certainly feature in my portfolio going forward, as will the other precious metals. I tend to play them more on the basis of trading opportunities, and largely because with those futures markets, I can use the leverage from time to time, and it's an efficient way for me to participate. I never try to recruit anyone to do that if they prefer the more traditional routes, such as bullion funds, which are the more conservative, most cost-effective route for picking up bullion. And I also participate a bit in the gold shares as well. And you will have seen the charts, perhaps, that Owen put up showing that HUI, that gold bugs index, is what appears to be encountering support at a natural level for such support. So that sector, I feel, will remain extremely attractive. I also feel that the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme, again, that applies to the precious metals as well. But I'm thinking now particularly of the industrial metals, that this theme will run and run and run. And I have seen and occasionally posted some of the many bearish arguments on commodities and industrial resources in particular. And I've done that for several years. I've never agreed with any of them beyond a medium-term correction, which for most of the industrial resources commenced in May. It started earlier for crude oil, as you know. It started considerably earlier, I think last February, for natural gas. But I've posted those reports, the intelligently written ones, because it's always part of the Fuller Money philosophy to present well-presented views that we don't necessarily agree with, just for overall perspective. Subscribers usually like that, and subscribers are more than capable of reading the arguments, listening to what we have to say, looking at the technical evidence, and making up their own minds. But suffice it to say, without going through the whole debate again, because I wrote about that, only last Thursday once again, but suffice it to say that when we look at some of those inflation-adjusted charts for the resources sector, it really does put the rise of the last few years in perspective. And when we look at all the demand that is coming from the developing world, in addition to the developed world's ongoing demand, but when we look particularly at that comparatively new demand from the developing world and the infrastructure plans for so many countries, it is, I think, not at all difficult. It doesn't require a great leap of imagination to see that this demand is going to run for decades. And this is at a time when supply is not exactly scarce, although there are some shortages, but the delays in getting new mines on stream and so on. You know those themes. So again, I do feel very strongly that this is a super cycle in commodities, and I want to be there. I want to participate in that. Now, the agricultural commodities are much more chancy. The key variable there is supply is determined by weather conditions, but demand is rising overall as more of these developed economies become, we'll see their growth rates improve quite rapidly. And so we're seeing vast new middle classes within not only China. And again, most of those bearish articles on commodities have been China-centric, and I pointed out the myopia of that thinking. Look at India, look at Indonesia, look at Vietnam. I mean, it's the whole Southeast Asians and the whole Asian region. Look at what's going on in the Middle East, often fueled by those petrodollars. Look at what's going on in Central and South America, fueled by the demand that we're seeing for resources, and also that's taking place in parts of Africa as well. So this is a period where so many of these countries that have embraced capitalism, you've heard me say before that when Francis Fukuyama wrote his book The End of History, he was talking largely about democracy taking over. Well, unfortunately, that hasn't happened to the extent that he predicted. There has been a gradual shift towards democratization over the last many decades. I suspect it will continue and very much hope that it does continue, but there are still plenty of authoritarian regimes around. But those authoritarian regimes, most of them, and certainly the bigger ones, China, for instance, have adopted capitalism. And India, having flirted with the Soviet economic model for quite some time, is certainly now fully adopted capitalism. And this is an unstoppable trend throughout the world. And when you get countries that adopt a capitalistic economic system and have the benefit of globalization, and have the benefit of the transfer of technology, that is a very powerful growth mixture. And that's what we've seen over the last few years, and I believe we will see a great deal more of it in the years ahead. Okay, I don't want to make this audio too long overall, but I'll just close by thanking so many of you for your very warm and supportive messages that you've sent me regarding this operation that I have on Monday, and I appreciate that very much. And I just want to reassure you that I am in the best possible hands, and I'm looking forward to coming back the week after next. Meanwhile, Owen will be in the hot seat and providing all the usual coverage that you expect with Fuller Money. So until I'm back, the very best to all of you.